Do you want your middle school girl to grow into a strong, confident, and resilient young adult? So do I. The only thing is, middle school's hard for both kids and parents. Welcome to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. I'm Janice Scholl, and I'm just a regular parent on a mission to uncover the best tips and advice for raising middle school girls. Hey there, everyone. I have a question for you. Are you a step-parent? Or do you have kids and are married to their step-parent? Or maybe you have a his, mine, and ours situation. Whatever your modern family situation is, it can add another layer of complexity into navigating the middle school years with our girls. It may be challenging, but according to my guest today, it can also be great. I'm talking with Amy Stone. Amy hosts the Amy Says So podcast, where she provides advice and empathy to step-parents and is author of the book Blend. She's also a mom, stepmom, and step-grandma. Welcome, Amy. Thanks so much for joining me today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
This is a discussion that, you know, I'm not a step-parent, and I'm excited to learn today because so many families do have something different than what my family looks like. But all of us are going to be touched by step-parenthood, whether it's a sibling who is in a blended family or whether it's us who at a later date become a person who is in a blended family. And yet we don't always advertise that that's our life.
The research is that more than 60% of the children in primary school in the United States live with somebody at least part of the time that they're not related to. So the data is really mushy because we don't ask people like, hey, are you a step parent? But we know that of the people who get married, about half of them will get divorced. And we know of those people, when half of them get divorced, we know that 70% of those people are going to remarry. And so it adds up. Like, it's something that impacts a lot of people. And yet, because we look at everything from this view that it should only be one house with two parents who live together, we accidentally and not intentionally and not to hurt people create an environment where some people are not quite sure how to manage it, right? There's not a resource. When I became a step parent, I did not know that 20 years in the future, I would be helping people navigate this path. I was honestly just very busy trying to figure it out for myself. But on a weekly basis, I am advocating, I'm helping people navigate things like lost lunchboxes and lost school uniforms and belts that go with uniforms that get mixed up. And it's not always a blended family. Sometimes it's grandma's house and sometimes it's daycare, right? Like, this is a situation that can come in a million different forms. And people don't also step into step-parenting always because of a marriage breaking up. There's 1,000 different ways that blended families form, but it is the thing that when you have, and we call this like the word we have used in the past, like, is systemic. When the system is designed for a picture that looks like a Rockwellian cover of Saturday Evening Post, right? You know, mom at the oven and dad in his suit and two kids and coloring at the table. If you are in a situation where your family doesn't look like that, maybe it's not your step parent, but maybe it's mom wears the suit and dad cooks the sourdough bread, you are othered. You don't feel like you match the situation. And that adds a layer of stress on for everybody. But the other thing is that people don't walk in and say, hi, this is my situation. And so I stand up and say, hi, let me help you. Let me help you navigate this. This is me. Come stand with me. I'll show you the way.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that you're doing this. And as I said, I'm not a step parent, but our family we fall into some other buckets. And right, it is complicated because it's really tough when you're othered for whatever reason to find your people when you're not wearing a badge that says, these are all of my qualifications. Are you my people?
Right.
And so I really love that you're willing to stand up and do this with people. And what you were saying, it hits on an important question that I had for you, which, you know, like, I read a lot of parenting books, A, because I raise my hand and say that I need them. I totally need them. But B, also for the podcast, right? I talk to people, I learn about their work. And I don't see a lot represented or tailored for blended families and even single parenthood. I find that it's kind of missing. It's like when you talk about families in these other circumstances, there might be a sentence or two saying, oh yeah, and this is like, this is more hard for single parents, or this is more hard for blended families. And then that's the end of the discussion. Am I just missing it because I'm not looking for it?
The words I use are, I say it's a really, really under-supported part of the parenting world. And it is a little different. There are some people who are out there telling their own stories and creating resources, but there are some limitations. So the dominant thing that people write about in parenting now is still based on like the family systems model that came out in like the 40s or whatever. And that doesn't include anything other than, you know, mom, dad, kids, grandma, grandpa, aunts and uncles. And that is what people still use. The majority of parenting books are written from that standpoint. The majority of parenting books are written by men, which is fascinating because the joke about this is I read a breastfeeding book that was extremely helpful by, you know, Dr. Sears. He's a dude. He's never breastfed anybody. And so it is a disconnect, but at the same time, I will tell you it was helpful. So they're written by men, which is an interesting thing to think about if you are, you know, living your life as a woman. And they're also heavily concentrated. So they're heavily concentrated on first families, which is a first-time marriage and first-time kids. They're also extremely, extremely oriented in primary childhood, like the first 5 years of life. And so anytime you get out of that, and I understand that because that's like the market. It's like that's where it is. The secondary problem about the resources for step-parents is that many of them have an agenda. So they are written by people who run faith-based ministries, or they are written by people who have a specific thing. Those are wonderful if they match your ideology. But for anybody who's not matching that ideology, it's a little bit of a struggle. And they are very, a difference between me and a lot of the resources that are out there is that they are very focused on the hardship and the drama and the difficulties, which is important, but my emphasis is very much based on being able to do it. You know that like saying that's like, you know, the people who are in the process of doing things should not get interrupted by the people who are not doing them, right? There's a book called Step Monster, and it opens up by saying that being a stepmom is the perfect trifecta for clinical depression. And I didn't read this until I was doing the research to start my coaching business. And I thought to myself when I read that, if I had read that when I was in the process of working on this, I would have run for the hills. You would be talking to me from a yurt in the mountains, right? It wasn't helpful. And so when I set out to start creating my resources, I tried to be very intentional about the emphasis on not judging people and meeting them where they are and not focusing on the things that are unpleasant just because they're unpleasant, but more about what are the tools if we want to do this and we want to be intentional about creating a life we love, what are the tools that will help us?
I love that you turn the tables back on, hey, how do we do this well? How do we enjoy our experience?
Exactly.
Because that's what families are blending for. Can you talk to me a little bit about step-parenting through the middle school years, especially with girls? Because you know, we talked about many of your clients are stepmoms, and I think that there is a different dynamic for stepmoms versus stepdads a lot of times.
So yeah, there definitely is. And I have never lived as a stepdad. So, one of the things I offer with that is like, so I say that all stepparents are under-supported, but the very limited resources that are out there are almost exclusively oriented towards stepmoms, to women who are navigating this situation, which is really interesting. So they're even less supported, but there is a little bit of many people observe a double standard where a stepdad steps in and he is obvious. And the same thing, a similar thing happens with fathers and mothers. They are praised for doing very primary level support where the women who step into the role there feels like there's a different expectation. So sometimes a stepmom feels like she's expected to take on the role of a nurturing, mothering figure. And a stepdad is like, oh, I'm paying the bills. And they're like, yay, you. But so my oldest stepchild is a girl. And so she was 8 when I came into the relationship, 12 when we got married. And so right about that age. I'm going to share this story with you because it's one of the few times, there aren't a ton of these, where the distance and perspective I had as the newest person on the scene, as the step parent, actually paid off. So what's even more hilarious about this is I will say my in-laws, my father, my husband's mom and dad were both middle school teachers. So they loved it. You could not have paid me. If you said, Amy, you have to go back and work in a middle school as your next phase, I would be like, there's not enough. There's not enough for me to do. I think it's a tough, tough time. But so we were having a family weekend and my stepdaughter asked to do something, which I don't even remember what it was, but it presented with the full urgency that shows up at that age, where I don't know if it was a party, I don't remember the details, but like not being able to go was the end of her life. Everybody around her was horrible because we were not able to go. And the reason she wasn't supposed to go was because her grandparents were coming, right? And so as a family. So as an adult, this is not a dramatic situation. But because she was a young teen, there was a lot of emotion floating around. And the thing about this that's hilarious is that my husband and his ex, her mom, were flabbergasted by this very dramatic tween, teen, young person. And I was there as the new person on the scene with no knowledge about anything, like, oh my gosh, she's 13. You don't remember being 13? I still remember what this feels like. I remember this, like, they're like, what happened? Where did this come from? Where is our daughter? And I was like, no, she's 13. This is what you do when you're 13. You know, she got to go. It's the most important thing to her ever. And so we, you know, it's going to be a challenge to convince her and, you know, reconcile that with her. And I remember chuckling at the fact that I was the one that noticed it because I was new on the scene and I didn't have all 12 or 13 years of daily exposure, right? Because kids try out, well, you know this because you're working with, you read the parenting books. Adolescents try out their new personalities, their adolescent personality outside of the house. And then it comes home and we're the last people to see it, right? But I didn't have that exposure to like the first 7 years of her life. I had met her as a tween. So I was able to see her as the emerging teenager before her parents were. And as soon as I pointed it out, and it wasn't the best conversation I've ever had in the family, because I was like, where are you? Who are you looking at? Like, this is where she always is. As soon as I pointed it out, though, the cousins were there and they were talking about, oh my gosh, how hard middle school is. And we remember all the drama. And then my in-laws showed up who had all that experience managing middle schoolers, and they were able to help us like walk through that drama moment. That's a little snapshot of the introduction to my, as an entertaining story of the introduction to one of the experiences I had as a middle school age stepmom.
Well, I love that story for a variety of reasons, one of which is because it actually benefited you. Right. And like all of us parents of tween and teen girls, I think can learn a lesson in that, because there are so many times I say like we treat them and we believe that they're younger than they are in some ways, and then we treat them like they're older than they are and expect more maturity in other ways. And so coming in curious and not really having a history allowed you to see in the moment and be present versus her biological parents. So right. I love that.
I had less confirmation bias. Yes.
Yes. But it is challenging. Oh, and yeah. I'm sure, like you said, it wasn't the best conversation with the family. And I mean, I'm imagining that if I am the biological mom and I'm feeling this way and you have a new person coming in saying, no, I clearly see it right. The way that it's really happening, that might not be the most comfortable experience. Can you talk to me about navigating the there's the communication with your tween or teen stepchild, and then there's the communication amongst the bio parents and the step parents. How does that go?
So it goes in all kinds of different ways, and some of them are good and some of them are bad. So you very accurately guessed how it went in this particular situation, because it was really a disconnect. Like it was a perspective disconnect, almost like people looking at a funhouse picture, and it's like I saw one thing and they saw something totally different. And I didn't have the skills that I necessarily have today and that I teach to be able to introduce that in a way that was not a little bit confrontational. I was very much like, what are you looking at? Because this is a 13-year-old girl, right? So the relationship conversation, like interpersonal communication, is not easy. And the other weird thing about it is that nobody really teaches us this, right? Like we learn how to write 5-paragraph themes in school, and then we might learn how to write, a thesis or a marketing piece or an email or a, financial document. But there are not lessons about how to talk to your new husband about their children and about their former spouse. And it is a really, really good skill to learn how to have these conversations, because otherwise it just doesn't feel good. And it comes in handy. So I didn't have kids when I joined the step family, and I knew nothing, zero zip about parenting. And I didn't know that I didn't know those things. I had the assumption that many people probably do, that my experience as a child, my experience of somebody who had parents, would be enough of an education. Was not. And I learned that quickly. So there were many times, and I admit that openly, where I put myself in situations that I shouldn't have. I overstepped, is what we say. And I didn't know it. And either my husband or his ex-wife would have to point it out and call me in. None of those felt good at the time. In my case, I'm very lucky that we have a good communication between my husband and his previous spouse. They're civil, and so we always had good communication. So I didn't have that level of conflict. I was really, really lucky. So they would point things out, and even though it would hurt at the moment, I would be able to look at it in the future and say, oh, you know what? I was wrong. So to give you an example of some things about that, so that people have because it's like a little bit of vagary. I once, when my stepkids were little, I made a bunch of comments in the kitchen about the difference between regular soda and diet soda. And at the time, I was really, I don't do well with sugar substitutes. It's just a thing about me. It's not a morality statement, but I don't take them very well. And so I was saying things that were pro-sugar, and it came back to me from the other house. They took those comments back to the other house and repeated them to their mom. And their mom came back and was like, listen, I don't appreciate you saying those things to the kids, because they have somebody in their family that's diabetic. So there's all kinds of sugar-free stuff in their house. And so me putting a judgment on the food in the other house was 100% out of line in that context. I didn't realize it when I did it, but when she pointed it out to me, I did realize it. Now, so me telling the story, it seems really calm and straightforward. But in the moment when somebody questions your judgment as a person, it feels like a personal attack. And so the tool is to not take it personally. Oh my God, so much easier said than done, right? So much easier said than done. And this is not just with parents or spouses or ex-spouses. It also comes in handy with teachers, employees, in-laws, strangers on the street. But the tool is to say, is to take a minute and allow yourself to get really curious. And if you can't in the moment get really curious, that's when you take a pause and say, okay, I'm too overheated to do this. But, if I can do that and be like, oh, is there merit to this? And then I was like, oh, wow, I was out of line. And then to build the trust between all of the adults and the kids, which is an earned thing, right? It takes time. That when we make mistakes, we're allowed to recover, right? We're allowed to repair. And I think those repairs, that's the word the Gottmans use for it. That is a really, really powerful skill in all relationships, to acknowledge that, and this goes for our middle school girls too, right? They're going to make mistakes. Building that in, that there will be a repair, there's a chance to repair, to recover if it works, is a power tool.
I like that story because if you didn't hear the other side,
right,
if they did not come back to you and explain why, most of us who do not have a family member who is diabetic probably would think that's a reasonable conversation, whether you agree with sugar-free or not.
Right.
It'd be like, this is your position on sugar. It's not that big of a deal, right? But in this context, it was. So context matters.
Context matters.
And the only way you found out the context is because of communication. And the only way you can hear that communication is because you're able to set yourself aside.
Yeah. And with middle schoolers, context is hilarious, right? Because middle schoolers, at least my middle schoolers, so there's been four middle schoolers that have gone through my house. All four of them, and so many times, have assumed that the other person on the other side of the conversation is at the same point they are. So they come to you at, like, if there's a five-part story, you know, they come to you starting at point number four. Hey, Amy, this happened. Hey, Mom, this happened, right? And it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense the first time you hear it. And until you know to, like, take that minute and be like, all right, I hear you. What happened before that? And who else was there, right? And what happened before that? And where was that? You know, like, you have to back it up for them and get the context before it even makes sense. And they, my middle schoolers were always very frustrated by the fact that I was not able to read their mind and didn't already know everything that was happening in their lives. So, you know, they come in and they're like, you know, Susie and I are fighting. And you're like, who's Susie? Like, it's like, have I forgotten this name? Like, what, right? You have to back it up. And there's the huffing and the frustration and the Mom, Amy, God, you know, nothing. And you're just like, I don't know. I cannot help you until I have more information.
Yeah. And I think it works in the other direction as well. There's too many times when, as parents of middle schoolers, we try to discount whatever our middle schooler is experiencing.
Right.
And we're like, don't worry about this. It's not a big deal. But it's everything to them in the moment. And it was everything to us when we were that age and we didn't have that experience of being able to repair, right? Like, we don't know what happens next. We just know in that moment, in middle school, that's the end of the world as we know it. And so I think it comes from both directions. And so even us adults aren't as good as recognizing that they experience things differently than us because they don't have as many experiences.
Right. And there's two sides of that, right? Like, so they don't have as many experiences. They think that, you know, the lunchtime fight or the lost invitation to the party, the important party, that's the end of the world. But they are also unaware of the impact of some things that can really, really affect them. And so, you know, that's the challenge of being an adult with a, you know, like, they're almost fully formed people and their frontal lobes are not done yet and they don't have any sort of concept of permanence. And so, and it does feel, so I'm a Gen Xer, like, I turned 50 this year. It does feel like it's very accelerated and intense at sometimes, the social situations and the mistakes that people can make and the gravitas of the situation that would back in the 80s have just been an embarrassing moment. And so it is more challenging these days, I think, for parents to sometimes navigate those very serious situations. And it can be really scary as an adult helping our kids navigate it. I was talking to somebody who's going through, like, they're actually in high school, so it's not middle school, but, you know, a friend group, and somebody said something online and somebody took a screenshot and forwarded it to the rest of the group. And one parent got a hold of it and now it's going to the parent group and it's just exploding and it's so unpleasant. it's one of those situations where you take a minute and you're like, oh, I'm so glad this wasn't around when I was doing stupid things myself. And it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And you touch on something that I want to ask you about, which is, you know, especially at every age, but especially in middle school and as you get into the teen years, there may be differences in parenting philosophies.
Oh, gosh.
People are coming online with cell phones and social media, and whether it's, you know, this is what we allow in our house and that's not what our stepchild is allowed in a different house. Maybe the rules are less, are more flexible or less flexible elsewhere. And sometimes maybe the bio parent feels differently than the step parent within the same house. How do you navigate that?
Truthfully, everybody's going to navigate it a little differently. So I'll give you some context and some things that tend to hold true, but there's a lot of variety in this. Just like if you looked in 100 houses at dinner, you'd see 100 different servings on the table. One of the things that holds true, one of the biggest challenges specifically for parents who got divorced is the reality that you can no longer truly control what happens in the other house. And so releasing the idea that if you have a policy in your house that you can just arbitrarily tell the other person who was your life partner for a long time and is the other parent how you want them to do it, and they'll do it because you're sharing the space, there's the distance that gives them the ability to do that. So different bedtimes, different philosophies on homework, food, spending, and cell phones, those are the top things that come up with this. So the number one reason people reach out to me is because they feel like they have a difference in parenting styles. And it's true. But one thing that I offer for people is that I found this to be true with, so I have two stepkids, the oldest kids, those are my husband's kids. And then I have two kids with my husband. I felt like there were different parenting styles when I was a stepmom. And now I will tell you, my husband and I have differences of opinions with our children. It's not actually a step-parent exclusive issue. Like, we don't always agree. So to fast forward and give you the tool that helps people navigate this, in my opinion, is being very clear on the values that are in your home and that are yours, right? Because, and understanding other people's values, right? Because we don't always agree necessarily on our values, but once you know what that is, you can sometimes understand it. It doesn't always work, but, you know, I might not agree with my husband on certain things, but I know that it's something he believes in. And so I understand that he's going to make that decision that way. And that helps me decide how much I want to fight about it, how much I want to like make it an issue. My husband loves to pay for school for all of his kids. He loves it. It's like something that he truly, truly enjoys doing. I may not always agree with that. I might rather take like some like fabulous vacation or buy like some new house. School is expensive. But the fact that I know that that's like a really, really important thing to him, it's one of his values, I understand why he wants to make that decision. So even though we don't necessarily agree, it helps us have the conversation. And because when you take it to the value level, the conversation is different. It's just different. Like if I know that one of your values is faith or one of your values is health, like it changes the conversation. It's like, I know this is important to you. And then there are other tools to help people understand where you're coming from. People are not always going to agree. And there are going to be situations where they just don't agree. They just don't agree. And it doesn't happen in just blended families. It happens between extended families. It happens between siblings. Like most families in the U.S. now have like somebody in their family that's an anti-vaxxer somewhere and people who are not anti-vaxxers, right? So those two things coexist, maybe by not talking about them very much.
Yeah. Vaccines, religion, politics. These are all things where like there's probably someone that you love that you really dislike their view on something. And and learning how I really like the focusing on values because how you even when you share values, like let's go back to your sugar example. if you're a person who cares about health,
yeah,
you can still execute those values differently.
100%.
And so understanding where someone's coming from, understanding the context and their values, that helps you say, like, okay, I can see how they get there.
Absolutely.
And I can be okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, I started that conversation with like, hey, you know, sugar-free stuff is unhealthy, but for a diabetic, sugar-free stuff is necessary. Like removing sugar. And so, yeah, it's like when it's understanding the value and both of them. I mean, health is a moving target. Like, listen, it's like the craziest thing. When I was a kid, they were like, don't eat fat. Then it's like, don't eat fish. Then it was like, don't eat cold cuts. Then it's like, don't eat eggs. Then it's like, okay, now eat eggs, you know, and don't eat these things. And I can't keep it straight with what fish is safe and what fish is not. And, you know, like it's just, it's a moving target. And so, that's the other thing to, you know, that with all of these targets, families are complicated.
Yeah.
They're complicated. And so keeping that in mind is helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. We all do things for a reason. It's not, there are not many people in the world who are doing things that they believe are at the detriment of their kids on purpose.
Right. And the same thing goes for the middle schoolers. They're also doing things for a reason. And often it's not apparent to the adult that is around them. And it's it takes skill, but it's like, so what was going on in your head when you decided to, you know, climb up onto the roof this afternoon with all your friends? You know, like it's like, you know, it's like, what are you thinking there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Like if we can, in every interaction, just assume that the other person is doing the best they can with the resources they have, it can improve that experience, whether it's your spouse or a biological mom on the other side, or it's your kid.
100%. 100%.
If we can just assume that the intent was there, even if we don't get it.
Absolutely. That really, I mean, context and the assuming positive intent goes a long way in most situations. I mean, it's not always true. Sometimes there are jerks in the world and people are doing mean things, but you know, those are two key things that I think are helpful. But it's easier to talk about it in this context than it is when you're in the moment. And, you know, like, so, and that's also a thing just to keep in mind. So, you know, you might want to have the best view of somebody's intention, but in a very stressful moment, like an urgent situation, somebody is sick, somebody's broken a leg, car accident, stuff like that, you know, an emergency situation, a very modern example, a lockdown warning from school, right? Those things get lost and you react in a very, you know, responsive way. And everybody does it unless they are, you know, have been really, really thoroughly trained not to. And there aren't very many people who are like that, but they're out there. And the giving yourself grace and the people around you grace for that is also really important. It's like, wow, that was crazy. And we all were a little bonkers. And now I would like to apologize for the fact that was screaming like a banshee. Would anybody like some, you know, some chips, you know, like pass the peas, you know?
I really think that there's so much value in this conversation for people. And I know that there are going to be moms in particular who want to learn more from you and your podcast, the topics that you talk about your podcast. I feel like they're the things that nobody has a friend to ask. Do you know what I mean? When they're going through it. So I want everybody to have access to your podcast. And also, can you tell us where your book is available so that people can learn more from you? Because we could talk all day.
I am a talker. I did on every report card get that comment from the teachers. It was like, she talks too much. And then my kids got that on their report cards when they were young. And I was like, listen, only person who's surprised to hear about this is you because you didn't know it. But I expected it because we are chatty. So my name is Amy and I call my business Amy Says So, which is a play on that, you know, because I say so as a parent. And the podcast is the Amy Says So Show because I'm just so creative that that's how I titled it. And when I came up with the first like year of content, I want to say thank you for giving me that compliment, because I wasn't sure how it would be received. And it was really, a lot of it was me fleshing out some of my ideas. But the person that I had in mind who was listening is really the person who's unsure and is sitting alone in their car, or, you know, has headphones on at a coffee shop, or sitting on the floor of their closet or in their bathroom, like, I don't know what to do and I don't know anybody to ask. And then you have the privacy of the podcast can be very private. You just put your headphones on. Nobody knows what you're doing. So that's the Amy Says So show, and it's available everywhere. I wrote a book and it's called Blend. It's really about the 10 lessons that I learned in 20 years of being a step parent. It's a ridiculously personal version of my story. You will know more about me than you ever wanted to in your whole life, but it takes through like the things that I learned, and that is available on Amazon. And it's also, if you don't want to pay the Amazon gremlins for the book, I have a downloadable version, which is like a PDF that you can read. So it's not as wonderful a reading experience, but it's available there. And that's on the website, amysaysso.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more conversations with experts designed to help you support your middle school girl, please hit subscribe. You can also sign up for the newsletter at the link in the show notes to receive emails about tips and resources, upcoming events, and new podcast episodes, all designed to support you and your child.